life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. Dynamite. Brian Smith and Anthony Askew here on episode 154 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. And today we are going to be discussing the 2004 motion picture Blade of the Phantom Master with Bradley C. Make.
Hello.
Discussing it with him. He's not in the film. Just to clear that up. You can tell discussing it with him because you just heard his voice. But before we get to that, we must first do our weekly retro recap where we rewind 10 years to a 2004 television anime and we watch it week by week until one of us gets fed up with it. And we are currently watching Paranoia Agent, which we are on episode 3 of. And as I picked it, I'm the one doing the recaps.
Phew.
Which isn't actually proving as hard as I thought it was going to be, because in terms of describing what happens each episode so far, it's fairly simple. And this episode we are dealing with, let me find her name, Harumi Chono, who we saw in the previous episode as the personal tutor of Yuichi. Oh, and I'm hearing myself in my headphones off somebody's microphone. I'm going to say it's probably Bradley because his head keeps on appearing every time I talk. Yeah, on Skype.
Oh, it flashes up. And
yeah, on Skype.
Let me say something again. Oh, that sounds a bit better. Okay.
I turned it down a bit.
Okay, here we go.
Try speaking louder.
Hello, Internet. I'm speaking louder. Can I hear myself? Brian, can you hear me? No, I can't. That's excellent. Which is kind of what happens in this episode of Paranoia Agent.
Even going to edit this?
Mainly deals with a character talking to herself. For Harumi Chono, we saw her as a personal tutor. In the previous episode, she has an alternate personality named Maria, who works as a prostitute. And they talk to each other via answering machine. She is being treated for this by a doctor, but she's not telling her superior who proposes to her and eventually marries her about her multiple personality. And she thinks she gets rid of her, but it turns out that she hasn't. The way she attempts to get rid of her does kind of clue you in that she's not going full bore at first, because all she does is take all Maria's clothes and puts them in a suitcase, which is kind of like setting yourself up to say, oh, she could come back if I wanted her to come back. And she does. But eventually she escalates it by throwing the clothes out. But when Maria takes control of the body again, she goes to the dump and recovers all the clothes. And it builds and builds and builds. She sees Yuichi and he says how great it was that he got attacked by Shonen Bat, because he's no longer a suspect.
He's free.
And then that same thought goes through her head and she is eventually attacked by Shonen Bat, freeing her from Maria.
Is she free, though?
Well, we have to wait and see. There's a few... The cops show up again, wondering what all the connection is between all these things, sort of saying how the first two victims are a connection, the second two is a connection, but they can't see a connection between all four. We've got the mysterious old man is drawing on the hospital floor again. This time animals.
No clue what that means yet.
And we also see one of the clients of Maria. We don't know what he does yet, but we know he's in the opening and closing credits.
Oh, the fat gentleman.
Yeah, we do. You know, he does show up at the end of this episode, doesn't he?
You see him, he's in bed.
No, but at the end of the episode, you see on the TV that they've captured Shonen Bat, and he's the guy who's captured him. He's an off-duty cop.
Oh, yes, that's him, yeah.
Yeah.
At least they think they've caught him. Obviously, we don't know.
Yes. I really like how that's delivered. It's like a complete throwaway. Off-screen, you first hear it, just from the sound of the TV. You're not even watching the TV at that point. And
that girl's little doll thing.
Yes, which is the TV. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, another great episode. The animation's slightly worse than the first two. Only really noticeable on the younger cop's face. The It's like when
that is picky. That is.
Very... But it was just like when his face was at rest, it did not look as good as he looked. Because it was particularly noticeable because once he became animated, his face looked more like what it was supposed to.
Mm.
But yeah, that is being really picky.
If that's the only criticism that you can think of, that is. It's a great episode. It's a great series so far.
This episode's the one which is most like Perfect Blue.
I was thinking that throughout, so. Yeah.
I think they say on the DVD documentary that a lot of bits of this are ideas they had for other projects.
Okay.
Which were never used,
I definitely want to watch episode 4. No qualms at all.
Excellent, which I believe will be dealing with that policeman. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on to Blade of the Phantom Master.
I keep forgetting where it's called, you know.
It has a lot of elements, and we'll get to the elements of its name when we get to the game element of the episode, because it does have elements of names which appear in lots of other things. You could easily get them all mixed up. Yeah, is it the Phantom of the Blade Master? The Master of the Phantom Blade?
Blade X Phantom? Yeah, it's a really generic name, isn't it? And I kind of think that that's why it's a movie I never really heard of until just recently when I was at Otakon and Daryl was showing clips of it for one of his panels. But it feels like something that a lot of people would like, right? This feels like a real crowd pleaser kind of action movie, that is incredibly anime, even though it's a Korean co-production that's inspired by a Korean manga. And also, clearly the manga derives a lot of its aesthetic, from anime as well. But I'm rambling a bit, so do you want to set this up a bit better, Brian?
Yeah, it is directed by Joji Shimura, who I looked up, and the other things they've directed are really not like this. They've directed Tamagotchi the movie, three series of the Tamagotchi TV series, and also the Animal Crossing movie.
Well, this does have a little creature in it.
It does.
Tamagotchi-like, perhaps, but... Other than that.
Oh, in fact, two Tamagotchi movies they've done. And a bunch of Pokemon storyboards, storyboard for the Professor Layton movie. Yes, this is like a real...
This is their big break.
Well, I don't know about a big break, no, because I think they did this before they did all those Tamagotchi
stuff. Oh, really? Stuff. Okay. Yeah. So this was their punishment, so at least that was their punishment.
And it is based on a comic by... Oh, here we go. Korean pronunciations. Yuen In-wan wrote it and Yang Kyun Il drew it. And, Oriental Light and Magic were the studios that I think they did. They definitely did the Layton thing. I don't know if they did the other stuff as well. So that would explain that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes across as... It feels a little like... The first three or four episodes of a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
In that the first half hour is very much the introductory arc of the two main characters and kind of gives you an idea of the world. And then the rest of the film is a completely separate arc, which goes on probably about twice as long.
Yeah.
And that is joined together by a very long sequence where the two main characters just walk around.
Any reason for that being?
They have to transition somehow, and I think it's also trying to explore the very awkward relationship between these two characters, since one of them essentially has the headband of the dead boyfriend. That clearly the girl is still attached to, and our hero, Munsu, doesn't really appreciate Sando being there in the first place. So their storyline of how Munsu eventually accepts Sando as his bodyguard is, I guess, the one storyline that runs through the whole movie and is completed by the end of it. So.
Mm. So here is the description that ADV gave it when they released it back in the day. In the ashes of justice, two heroes stand alone.
Long ago, the legends say, there was a secret army, unseen until needed. These warriors struck from the shadows, protecting justice and defending the Jushin Empire from both tyrants and thieves. They were called the Aemon Ossa, the Phantom Masters. But now Jushin has fallen, and its kingdom's destroyed, its citizens left to the mercy of zombies, beasts, and sadists. And yet from the ashes of destruction, a hero has appeared to defend the people. His name is unknown, and no man knows who he serves, but there are clues. The strange symbol he wears around his neck, and the female living weapon he commands. Is he the last of the Aemon Ossa? The answer will be revealed when the blade of the Phantom Master is unleashed. So there you go.
But yeah, Munsu is a Aemon Ossa, supposedly the last one of his kind in the kingdom of Jushin, which apparently has, the kingdom's fallen, and he's the last one. People believe that these, they're kind of, what are they, they're based on secret royal inspector is the position from, Korean history. I think generally supposed to protect the people from, corruption in, government.
So it's a secret police that actually does good work? That seems odd.
I think so, yes. I believe it's secret police who are monitoring the government and officials, which is kind of what he does here.
Yeah, though it is.
He really
begrudgingly.
Has, begrudgingly, yes.
He does do it.
The first half hour is a warped adaptation of Chun Hyang-gar, probably a Korean folk tale. So in that story... So we meet Munso, who meets in the desert, this guy called Mongryong.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. He's the main character in Chung Hangar. In Chung Hangar, he does everything that he says he wants to do in this in Blade of the Phantom Master. So he's according to the Wikipedia, Mongryong and Chung Hyang first meet, then they fall in love, then they part. Then Byun becomes
evil, kind
yeah,
of
yeah, so becomes right. A tyrant and imprisons Chung Hyang. Mongryong wins a place at the station examination, which is what he tries to. You see that he's failed to do at the start of this film
numerous times.
Yeah. Then he returns, punishes Byun, and they live a long and happy life and get married. However, in this, he dies in the first 5 minutes of the film.
Yes. And it's excellent because Mongryong is such a generic character trope, this very young, naive kid, and he's out for revenge, and you've seen kind of his character type before where he's going to kind of latch himself onto the much more badass main character and kind of become the sidekick. And that's what you expect to happen. What actually happens is he ends up becoming basically cannibal bait. In this world, there are crazy hobgoblins who are also love eating humans. They live in the desert, and a large group of them spring up on our characters and kill Mongryong suddenly, instantly. His body just collapses into Munsu's hand. And Munsu ends up even using Mongryong as a shield. His body as a shield from a mass of spears that are thrown at him. And Munsu negotiates with the cannibals, look, you could try and kill me, but it's going to be really hard because I'm a badass. So why don't you take this body and you can eat this and I can leave in peace? And the cannibals are like, okay, yeah, that's cool. So what the cannibals don't know is that Munsu buried dynamite in Mongryong's body. And as Munsu is walking away, not even looking behind him, the body explodes and takes every cannibal within what looks like a 1 mile radius with it. It's awesome.
It is. Nothing is sacred to Munsu. Not even his newly acquainted friend. Well, not even a friend.
And isn't he swigging from Myung-Yong's
water bottle
at the end as he walks up?
He is.
And this is
and
all...
he takes his headband.
Yeah. Yeah, this was the point where I was like, oh, this film probably came along 10 years too late. I think in the early 90s, people would be all over. This would be something people were talking about just from those first 5 minutes or so.
Absolutely.
But people have lost their bloodlust. Anime fans have. They want healing Shut anime. They don't want all this blood and death happening to them.
Well, I think it's been finding some of its audience who definitely want that.
That is true.
It is easily accessible, by the way. If this sounds like the kind of thing you'd like to see, you can watch it right now if you're in America on Netflix or on Funimation's. I believe both their website and their app would work. I'm a subscriber to their app, so I was able to watch it just this morning on my iPad.
Yeah, well, I use VPN to watch it on the US net. It's even on, is it on YouTube? Yeah, it's on YouTube as well.
Oh, okay.
Whether that's...
They're everywhere.
Whether that's officially uploaded, I don't know, but it is on YouTube.
You will.
I mean, Funimation owns the rights, so if Funimation was the one that uploaded it to YouTube, then it should be good.
Yeah, it's, I watched a bit of it in the dub and then I switched to the Japanese, voice because the dub is a little bland.
Even Munsu's voice?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought he was the blandest voice. Gary.
So is this the old ADV dub or did Funimation go back and redub this?
I think this is the original, what I was reading, I think this is all it got.
Yeah.
It's a single.
Okay, so they just straight up licensed whatever ADV had on their DVDs.
I guess so. It feels like a fire sale product anyway.
It definitely does. Yeah, this is very, very low rent. Even though it's a fun movie, it really doesn't look like much.
No,
it looks like an episode of Avatar.
It has bursts of good action, but yeah, sometimes. And it gets noticeably worse after the first half hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10 years old, remember?
I know,
it
but...
Is, keep it again.
There wasn't 10 years between the first half hour and the remainder.
That's very true.
I mean, I don't think 10 years is in... I'm not going to... I hate saying the word excuse, but there was plenty of fantastically animated stuff in 2004.
Yeah, we're watching Paranoia Rangers. Dated.
Yeah, this doesn't look dated because...
It's not.
The animation is bad. The animation is just bad. It's not like the character designs look like a throwback, though I guess they kind of do. Munsu reminded me of Fist of the North Star. He looked like he stepped out of Fist of the North Star at times. Oh, he's got that very craggy face.
Yeah, I thought of him more. He's very much a Vampire Hunter D type character, though.
I've seen him as a Jubei, a very Jubei Ninja Scroll-esque. Wisecracks and whatnot.
But yeah, that will have to be dragged into doing something good. And even when he's doing something good, he does it in the... Particularly in the second half, the least amount of explanation possible. Where he just starts gunning people down with no explanation.
Still a bit unclear on all that, but... what if he was wrong? What if he was wrong? He made a mistake.
Well, if he was wrong, then that guy would have been able to bring them back to life.
That's very true. He could have done potentially anywhere, regardless.
Well, yes. So the second story involves after a gun deal goes bad for the dealer, not for Munsu, a youth washes up on the shore and says there's something wrong on his island. They go there and there is a suspicious medic who uses needles to cure all ills. And... you get the feeling something very spooky is going on and there's some herbs. And that character, I had to do a bit more research to this because it isn't explained on the wiki page, I believe is based on a historical Korean doctor. Mm. It's the same name.
All right, so there's actually... Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. And I think the young man as well, his name's based on that guy's protege.
Oh...
Yuichi, is that his name, right?
That is the guy's name, yeah. That's the guy's name.
What is he famous for historically?
He's famous for mentoring a guy who, Hyo Yu, I believe his name is, who basically made medicine available to the general public rather than keeping it for the
rich.
So that sounds like an incredibly noble thing to do. So.
Yes.
Wow.
They just tainted his name.
He's the villain in this.
Well, no, so Yu's the young man.
Okay.
So in historically, the other guy was the mentor of Hyo Yu. So I think that's probably where those names came from, particularly with the medical and the herb.
Mm-hmm.
elements of the story. And I was like, that name must have base, having realized what the first part was, I was like, oh, I bet that name is important in historically, or is either a reference to something folkloric or historic. Because Munso apparently is also Park Munso is who he's based on. Who is
just
a,
whom?
He was a famous secret royal inspector.
Oh, okay.
In Korea in the 1700s. So famous that he has, like, folklore built up around him. That's pretty good.
Okay. So that's making some interesting connections. Do you think that having UET and his apprentice kind of be the villains in the second arc is some sort of a critique of that particular character, or
I'm thinking it may just be some sort of fun razzing. I don't think this is going in for deep critiques of things. I think it's going for, this is a fun historical reference to make at this point. Not being Korean, I don't know. But that, it doesn't feel like a deep series.
It doesn't, yeah. And even though it is very violent, there is a kind of playfulness to it. Where a lot of it is sometimes setting up a particular trope and then blowing it up, sometimes literally. And it kind of gives it a nice, very light feeling, even though it is really grim at times. Like, walking through a village and basically shooting villagers on sight is one of the things the hero does.
And the bit, you get the bit at the end where the villain appears to be making the sort of typical horror movie comeback, and he gets cut off by our hero in the most ignoble way, which I thought was a nice tweak on that cliche. Mm-hmm. But there's all sorts of stuff they don't explain.
Like, how does Munsu see them not as walking corpses? Because he has had no kind of, you know, treatment from anything. Like, how does he not see this run-down village?
Don't they say that it causes hallucinogens?
What does the plant alone?
Yeah.
The plant alone, okay.
Yeah. It seems to be a combination of the doctor regularly injects them with mandrake juice, which both attracts the souls and ties them back to the dead body, but also convinces them and makes them forget that they had all died in this terrible plague. We have been spoiling this left and right without any regard for
Munsu's got special powers, and, you know, not even discuss that.
So Munsu can summon supernatural creatures, which is his main attack form, apart from shooting.
It's like talisman with three horses on it.
Yeah, which I think that is like the sign of the position he holds.
Yeah, if you have one on, you can just do basic magic, two slightly better, and three summon an epic army, I suppose. I don't understand how Munsu can see. The instant he arrives, in theory, if that young boy is a corpse, which he thinks he may well be, how does Munsu not see a corpse wash up when he first sees
it? I think it's because it goes back to the souls being attached to the body. It's not the mandrake that makes people appear normal to even people on the other who haven't been injected with the hallucinogen. It's that the evil magician guy has figured out how to attract and retain people's souls to their bodies.
Rather than keep them alive.
Yeah. There's a bit where they explain that part of it, and that's at least my headcanon explanation for why that works the way it does.
I'm sure it would explain more in the comic later on, because when the guy grows black wings, he points out that he reminds him of somebody he knows. And
he wants to kill.
And he mentioned his name, it doesn't show up in this. We get no explanation of why Sando's got a gigantic monster hand.
Is that not just a metal claw attachment, or?
That's what I thought as well. It was just her weapon of choice.
She doesn't use it in the second part of the story.
Yes, she does.
No, she doesn't. Only she uses it to land on right at the very end, but no, for the rest of the second half of the story, once she's freed of Beyond, she just uses the sword.
Oh, you mean as a weapon instead of... Okay.
But and you don't really see it except bits when the cloak comes up that she's still got that hand.
So you think it's a big hand rather than a...
Hey, if a guy can suddenly grow giant black wings... And
yeah,
can...
makes sense to me.
Oh, it's
there's cool. weird stuff going on that isn't explained in the film.
Unfortunately.
Well, actually, fortunately, because I think if they spent too much time explaining the story, it would get bogged down really quickly.
Oh, yeah, I agree in a single film, but I just mean, unfortunately, that I would be... I am interested to know what is going on.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out, though, the movie is very good about keeping things moving along.
Yeah.
And it doesn't spend a lot of time bogged down in explaining, here is the 1,000-year history of Junshin, which is currently a fallen empire, and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I think the comic is complete, but I don't think it's had an English translation.
That's a shame. I'm looking at, like, pictures of the artwork now, and it looks pretty good. I'm quite impressed.
The Desert Bat is the other character we should mention. Yeah, so there's the other main character is Sando, who is Chung Hyang. After she's freed, she becomes Sando, which is the bodyguard of the Amen Osa.
Why doesn't Amen Osa need a bodyguard? He can summon an army of...
Maybe so there's an excuse for the character to stay in the comic after...
Agreed.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's because the movie at least does a very good job of making Munsu seem vulnerable and still human, even though he can summon, a ghost army basically at will. One, he kind of has to keep his identity a secret. So if he's ever caught by surprise, he's in a lot of danger. And two, as the first story arc makes pretty clear, that army isn't all that useful against a lot of enemies. In fact, it really doesn't do much throughout the whole movie. His guns are a lot more prominent. Just a combination of his guns, his dynamite, and his quick wits. If anything, he's the kind of hero who ends up saving himself by outsmarting everyone else. But he's just very vulnerable. And the movie does a good job of convincing us that he doesn't have much in the way of plot armor. So a bodyguard seems like a pretty reasonable addition.
Yeah, he also has asthma, which he's... I think only touched in one scene and never. He has like a curse which resembles asthma, apparently.
Mm-hmm. He's got his weird inhaler around his neck. Like,
It is a magical inhaler he has. But you see when he's physically fighting that he's out of breath in the second half of the film.
Yeah, there's a fight scene, isn't there, where he's just running.
Yeah.
And he doesn't go very far before he's out of breath and in serious trouble. And then he gets mad at Sando for saving him. So what do you make of their relationship?
I guess he just kind of accepts her as that you might actually need someone to travel with him. Begrudgingly, I'm sure he'd rather be on his own, to be honest. Because there's no love there.
No,
to be love, but there's not.
I'd rather there isn't. What bothered me most about it was Munsu saying something along the lines of, you will do exactly as I tell you, no matter what. No matter even if that means you aren't effectively my bodyguard, that you just have to stay in one place. And eventually, like, the only way that their relationship improves at all, I guess, is that Sando has to break that oath. And Munsu basically realizes, I was kind of a dick to her. Maybe she's useful after all. By the way, has Brian been muted?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I was checking.
I would like to think in the story that she would fall in love with him. I think she's got a lot more emotional
ties. She has been through so much. I would much rather she remain neutral on that front. And there's also it would also be a little creepy, considering that one, she's been bound up, presumably raped. And traumatized. Right?
Well, I don't know about that, because I thought that at first, but
it's quite innocent. Well, he's not innocent, though, like the dictator, but he doesn't want to...
Yeah, he's trying to break her will so she'll be his bodyguard.
Okay, so I was interpreting it as there's a twist, right? He both wants her as a lover, and by he, we're talking about Lord Byron, who is the villain in the first arc, who is basically... We never really got into that first arc, but he's basically a petty, feudal dickhead who is the lord of the first town that Munsu walks into. in our story, the town that Monrion wanted to save, but became cannibal bait instead. It's a really cool story arc, by the way. I really like the bit about how Lord Byron, as he is known in the Funimation subs, which I thought was funny, he would do things like offer the villagers, you piss me off, so we're going to do a trial by combat, where you have to kill my giant. And eventually one of the villagers are able to take the giant by surprise and kill it, and Lord Byron gets pissed and tells his guards, all right, just kill everyone else anyway. It doesn't matter. Anyway, where was I going with this? So the story seems to be setting you up to think that Byron is trying to get Chonhyun to become his lover. But really it seems to be that he wants her both as a lover, but also as a bodyguard, because he can't really find anyone willing to be a bodyguard for him. So he has to contact a hypnotist to hypnotize Chonhyun.
But again, I that's why I suspect there's something more to the giant weird hand she has.
She might have been mutated.
It's like they're not so much bound her in some sort of sexual way. They've bound her because otherwise she would kill them all.
I mean, it is being played as something sexual.
Visually,
super fetishistic.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
But I think in practicality, he's trying to make you think that. And so it's a surprise when they say, oh, we've broken her, that she leaps out and starts attacking Munsu.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, that's played really well. We've basically spoiled everything about this movie at this point. There are no surprises.
It's
left.
10 years old. Don't worry about it.
It is. It's not, like I said earlier, though, it isn't, it feels like something that should be a lot more popular than it is, or at least I think there is a much wider audience for it than the number of people who I'm pretty sure have actually seen it.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's ever going to be popular.
I don't know. Well, I'm not really looking for popular either, but
more,
you know what I mean,
yeah,
right?
More well-known, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely among a certain subset of anime fans, as you pointed out earlier.
Yeah, but as I say, I do think it's 10 years too late. I think early not, or as we're speaking, 20 years too late for it to get that. I think
it's more bad language.
Yes.
And be released then.
Yeah,
it
needs early 90s manga video dub. Where he's just running around calling everyone cocksuckers.
That would actually be perfect.
So as I say, I think I find the dub voice of him pretty bland. And, her voice is even worse, I think, in the dub.
Yeah.
Not so much, not for bland, just for being kind of too squeaky and timid.
Mm-hmm.
When clearly she's not.
Well, I would imagine her as having more of a monotone voice, which I think the Japanese voice captures very well. She's not so much timid as she is
dutiful. I'm not sure what she's trying to be dutiful to her former boyfriend's dreams.
Yes, that's part of it. Also, unwavering. Oh, gosh, there's another word I'm looking for here. Because she seems demure, but she's not really. She's very focused, I think, is the word I would use.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's part of that long walking scene's point, is that you're seeing just how far she's willing to go for.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's trying to pretending to ignore her on that. But it is perhaps a little too long a walk for us to be watching. Because I was like, what is going on? Particularly once it moved away from animation to just stills.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that the end?
And then you got... But at the same time, that did move cleverly into the stills of the young lad swimming to shore.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were like, oh, okay, yeah, something else is happening here. That's a character we've not seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's easy enough to see. So, and it's only 87 minutes or something. It's quite short
just an hour
as well.
And a half. Yeah. It's really good for a rental. Get some friends together and just watch it as a group. I think it will play really well to a group.
Yeah, it's all right. It's we've definitely watched worse.
Yeah, last week, Initial D.
Yeah. Still revving in the back of my mind.
At least we weren't dropped into the middle of a story this time.
I am more intrigued by the story as a whole. Like, I'd be interested to try and track down the manga online somewhere just to see where it goes and, you know, what's the deal?
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the two story arcs we had, so I would like to read the comics sometime. It's self-aware enough that I'm pretty confident that anytime I know where it's going, it's aware that I know where it's going, and it will go out of its way to send me somewhere else, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it gives you hints of a wider world, because it says there's like a West country, which I assume will be analogous to America or something, who've been smuggling the guns into Jushin.
Yeah, it was good.
It was all right. I won't go as far as good. It was all right.
I was pleasantly surprised, per that.
Yeah, I'd say that same as well. You know, I was expecting it to be mediocre, and it was definitely more than mediocre.
But I'll not be telling people to watch it. I'll not be like, if someone says to me, oh, have you got any suggestions? This is not top.
What is top, Anthony? What is top? What is your top suggestion?
For what? Well, anime, somebody... Madoka Magica. There we go.
Oh, yeah, we've been talking about what we liked about it. What did we not like about this movie, other than the animation being pretty low rent?
I don't think it's as low rent as you're saying, but it's just not particularly exciting.
There's nothing special there.
No.
Yeah, it is very much tied up. I think too much of the story is tied up in the surprise of what could happen next. So if you haven't seen this movie and you've listened to the entirety of this podcast, I've spoiled all of it for you. And I would be curious to hear on Twitter whether or not you still enjoyed the movie, because I think too much of it is tied up in the surprise of the twist.
It's not that great.
I was going to say, yeah, the second half, the twist is signposted. I don't see how you could not see the twist coming in the second half story.
I saw it coming, but only because I saw the clips of the part where Munsu's wandering around the village and just shooting people on sight at a panel.
It reminds me, I don't know if there's any specific folktale it reminds me of, but it feels like a story if I've not seen, I've seen enough similar sort of...
The start of Full Metal Alchemist has a very similar thing where there's like a guy who's promises people being returned from the dead. And
oh yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking of it.
It's not exact, but it's...
But no, it's, yeah, it's those sort of stories. And it is the voice of Mace Hughes doing the voice of Munsu.
What's this?
Tie it to Full Metal Alchemist some more. Cool.
So in the interest of trying to tie down more specifically what it is we don't like about this, because I agree, there is something about it that makes it feel bland, and it's not just
the animation. Well, yeah, until I looked up what it was doing, as in relation to Korean history and Korean folktales, it did feel a lot like stuff I'd seen before. But knowing that it was going deliberately to have fun with those things, so you were supposed to say, oh, this is that story, but look what they've done to it. I think if you don't know that, then it can just seem like very generic fantasy. And the character design of Munsu is pretty generic. He's a guy wandering around in a trench coat.
He is. There's visually nothing about this that stands out. One of the villains has long white hair that's tied back in a ponytail, for Christ's sake.
He's got a headband. That's what's unique about him.
He looks better in the manga. Munsu looks a lot more badass in the manga.
I don't know. I'm looking at pictures of him. He's still a guy in a trench coat. I know how you like guys in trench coats, Anthony. You done finished that cosplay yet?
Moving on to the game. I'm just joking. No, I haven't. I like the look of him, you know. It's tried and proven.
And it is a bit weird that Sando carries on wearing her bondage gear outfit after she's been freed.
He ordered it to once he wanted it.
And so it almost seems like, maybe that wasn't part of the bondage. That was what she was wearing already.
We're going to put you in a chain.
So like, even in the flashback scenes of those tender romantic scenes with Monrion, underneath that long cloak, she's still wearing her bondage gear.
I'm looking at the pictures of the manga. She seems to wear even less in those. But, yeah. So, yeah, it's a sleeping mask in there. Yeah, yeah, the comic looks a bit better, and it looks like she's got a few more comical faces.
Because that's clearly what this was missing.
It was, yes, more goofy faces. Everything needs more goofy faces. That One Piece special, oh, that's excellent.
Oh, was it that 3D 2Y special?
Yeah, it's basically a movie. It's ridiculous. It is basically a movie. It's almost 2 hours long.
It's 2 hours long. Was it good?
What I've watched of it so far, yes, it's pretty good. Lots of fun animation.
I missed the live stream of it last night because I was traveling, so damn.
What's this all in aid of, this 3D 2Y?
The 15th anniversary of the anime.
Oh, okay. Okay. And it gets a 2 hour special.
Yeah.
Nice.
And the scene which seems like they invited Go Nagai to write it. It's kind of ridiculous. I was like, who is One Piece for nowadays? Because it's something for daddy. As they thrown in. But and then I did look up that it is directed by the guy who did the second episode of Re-Cutie Honey. So that explains some of the Go Nagai tendencies. But yeah, that was more fun than this.
Would say that.
It had better animation. I was like, oh, it's a new TV special. But some of the animation is pretty good. There's lots of fun drawings.
And would it appeal to me?
Probably not. If you don't know what the importance of the story they're telling.
Also, it is actually part, like, it's not just a brand new...
It is a brand new story, which is why
it
takes place in the time... In between the time skip.
And it's canonical, right?
Well, as near as these things get.
Mm. Yeah, it's canonical in the same way that... what was that movie we reviewed together?
Z.
Z, it's as canonical as Z is, which is kind of canonical, but... more in the sense that it just gave us a new perception on characters we were already familiar with.
And it has the first anime appearance of a particular character.
Is it a badass character?
Oh, is it the Admiral that we've been waiting for so long?
No.
Okay.
It's not any of the characters. It's exactly the character, if you read the comic, you'd expect to show up.
Really?
And so it wasn't a great surprise. It's not the Admiral we've not seen, and it's not the Shichibukai we've not seen.
And what 3D 2Y stand for?
That was the tattoo that Luffy got... And displayed on television so the rest of the crew would know not to come back in 3 days, but to come back in 2 years.
Ah, that's... Okay, okay. Mm. That makes sense. One day I will read it all. I start, and then I put it down, then I don't pick it up for a while, but one day.
Anyway, moving back to Blade of the Phantom Master... Yeah, so I can't get excited about it as I did just then, talking about One Piece.
You can try.
Or as excited as Anthony gets talking about Madoka Magica. But have you watched any of the other Korean stuff which is on Netflix under the anime tag?
No. Isn't there one like about a sentient piece of dog poop?
I don't know if that's on there.
I hope not. That sounds horrible. That means we'll have to watch it if it's on there.
But yeah, there were a series of Korean anime that ended up getting licensed here in the U.S., mostly by ADV, I think. And I haven't seen any of them. Blade of the Phantom Master is probably my first, though it only counts as a half.
Yeah, so that's the one which is on there, which is the co-production.
Mm-hmm.
And I did find it for you on my anime list eventually. Why were you looking for it on my anime list anyway, Bradley?
Because, so I like using my anime list whenever I'm looking up the names of characters, because they have the pictures of the characters right next to the names.
Oh, that's
it's much easier for me to remember than who is who.
That is pretty handy, yes.
Yes, yes.
Trick to the trade. I'll have to start doing that.
Okay, I wonder how much this is gets on, because it got DVD released, didn't it, back in the day?
Yep, and a re-release recently. I think it's part of Funimation's
SAVA.
Line of very, very cheap anime.
Yeah, you can get it for $10 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, this never hit UK.
No, no, I don't think we ever got it.
So I kind of agree with y'all that it isn't something to get too excited about. But for $10, that's a pretty good deal. It's good for a night out.
Nice.
It's a decent show, I guess, is what I'm saying. But I guess decent excites me more than y'all than it does y'all.
But it is the sort of thing on Netflix, if you're like, let's watch something on Netflix. Because when you're browsing Netflix, your standards of quality somehow lower.
Anything could happen.
Blade of the Phantom Master definitely benefits from how frictionless and easy it is to find entertainment nowadays. I guess in 2004, whenever you had to pay $30, $40 for a DVD, you would have felt a bit.
Yeah, and now you could find yourself watching half a season of Arrow and thinking, why did I do that?
Speak from experience there?
Yes. Yeah, I watched half a season of Arrow, mate. What of it? I might watch the other half and then season two when it's on there.
I've heard season two's finished, hasn't it?
It has, but it's not on Netflix.
I've heard it's really good, season two.
It's not on Netflix yet. I hear it's good as well.
I don't want to watch any of it, to be honest.
Not even when it crosses over with The Flash.
Especially not when it crosses over with The Flash.
It seems to get moderate, same things we're saying really on the Amazon reviews. Four people are giving it 5-star reviews, which may be going. Because they found it so cheap. I got it for $6.75. That's so 5 stars. The story and artwork was good, but wish it was longer.
Wish it was longer? Oh well. I don't know. Another story, perhaps, but not in the same film. As I've said, I want to know what else goes on, but not in the same film.
So, if it was a 26-episode TV series, would you be down for trying to watch the rest?
I would, providing there was a good story throughout. If it just stuck with this, you know...
Well, the story that we know is he's on a revenge quest for something. We got the guy's name at the end of the movie. So is that a good enough hook for you?
Depends if the reason for revenge is good. If it's not, then I might watch the first episode, then the last episode to see the fight. But I don't think.
But just going off of the information you have in the movie, like pretend the movie is the first 3 episodes of a TV series.
Sure, I'm going to say yes, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, all right. What about you, Brian?
Probably not. There's other things I could be watching. Depends what the character designs of the other characters look like, maybe. Who show up later.
There's a comedy episode somewhere in there.
I would be down for watching it as a weekly thing, personally. I would add it to my enormous watch list.
I was
going to
say, bear in mind, I'm not watching Terror and Resonance at the moment, so I really don't think I'm making time to watch this.
Oh, man, you are missing out on some great stuff this season, but we'll get to that in a couple weeks.
I'm watching other stuff, though. But, yeah, maybe not as much as you are. I've seen the lists. If you watched everything you said you were going to watch, and on top, some of that was you also said you were going to watch the things I was going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's book a lot of time for that episode. but yeah, that's Blade of the Phantom Master, as you say, Netflix DVD, go nuts. So now it's time for a game, which I may edit. And make it into a second game if it doesn't go as well as I think it is. But here we go. So it is time for podcast subject word association game. We'll play 3 rounds of this. So there are, as we mentioned earlier, there are 3 words in the title which get used a lot in other titles. Blade of the Phantom Master, Blade, Phantom and Master. So can you name anime with the word blade in the title? We'll go back and forth, and whoever can't name one loses that round.
Bradley, name a anime with Blade in the title.
Blade.
Yeah, that is correct. Anthony.
I'm going to say Blade of the Phantom Master, just to give a bit breathing room.
That's one.
Right, good.
Blade X Soul.
Yeah, that is correct. Anthony.
Is Break Blade?
Yeah, that is correct.
Gosh, that was my next choice. How long do I have? I'm trying not to Google here.
I'm sweating.
I know there's one more that on the tip of my mind.
Something with Blade in the title. Might be Blade something or something Blade. Or something Blade something.
Oh, God. I know that I know of more than just those three.
You are going to be kicking yourself when I read out some of these.
I bet the list is endless as well.
No, I am. I am short on coffee at the moment. That's my excuse.
Well, it is early in the morning for you. So.
Late in the afternoon for me.
You're in a lunch stupor.
All right, go on ahead.
Okay, well, you've lost. Anthony wins.
I was going to say Blade of the Immortal, or is that Imagined?
Yeah, that's how it's an anime.
Yeah, that would have been... Yes. Oh,
Queen's Blade.
Oh, Queen's Blade.
Tekkaman Blade.
Yep.
Beyblade. Anthony's favorite.
Oh, damn it.
Okay, let's move on to the next round. Phantom. Anthony, you can start this time. Anime with Phantom in the title.
Boogie Pop Phantom.
You are correct.
Phantom, subtitled Requiem for a Phantom.
Yep.
damn it, I should have been prepping when...
There's at least one we've done a podcast about.
When... Which seat was it in the first 50, second 50, or the third 50 of episodes?
This year.
Phantom Hall, no.
No. Can't get it, Ashley. No,
I'm past.
Okay, that's one all then.
What was it? What
Hunter
was it?
Hunter Phantom Rouge.
Oh,
dang. I forgot about that one too.
Phantom.
I was worried there, Anthony, because if you hadn't forgotten, I was
dead
out in the water. Yep.
Phantom Quest Core, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Phantom Blood.
Oh, damn it.
It's incredible that we forget all this. I think it's just because all these words are so cliche. It's easy to forget the title.
There was less phantoms than there are of the other two, though. So, back to you, Bradley, for Master.
He is my master.
Yes.
I hate that that's the one I thought of first, by the way.
Anthony.
This is hard. Oh, Tusa, I'm thinking.
I think one I may have already mentioned in this episode. Maybe not. Maybe that wasn't the credit I read out for that guy.
This is very difficult. Is there a Pokemon film with Master in the title?
There's many Pokemon films with Master in the title.
Pokemaster? Is there one with just...
I don't think there is. I think it's something close to that. Let me just check. No, there's nothing called Pokemaster.
I've just seen a title on Netflix that I could have used as well. Oh, never mind.
And that means Bradley is our winner.
Righty-ho! Bradley, where can people find you on the internet?
On Twitter, at Bradley C. Meek.
And Anthony, where can people find you on the internet? I've not asked you that for a while.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, there's Twitter, which is @AskYou, and that's about it. There's not much else going on.
You can find me on Twitter as well, at @Awesome_Engine.
And as always, you can find this podcast on dynamiteinthebrain.com, on facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain, and on iTunes. So why not subscribe and write us a review so that more people can find out about the masters of the Phantom Blade that are Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye!
Your life's run down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to be. blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.